CPA After Dark.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to CPA After Dark. I am Marit, one of the co-hosts, and I am here with my beautiful other half, Kristen.
Hi.
And today we are back on one of our favorite topics that we love to talk about, which is rental real estate. And Kristen was telling me before we started filming that she was thinking about it at 4 o'clock this morning. So do you want to lead us in and give us some of your thoughts?
I've been up very early this morning, since 4 a.m. my time, which is, I guess, like 2 a.m. your time.
Yeah, it's something like that.
Yeah. So I always, like, while I'm on my way to the gym, I think of these like crazy things. But for some reason, I was thinking about real estate this morning. And I started thinking, well, we're filming today. Why don't we talk about, bring it all the way back to 2021 when I bought my first rental property, and how I thought in my head that it was going to do all these wonderful things on my tax return. And we'll get into a little bit as to why it didn't. But there's a lot of things that I didn't know when I first got into real estate, and like the long-term rental game versus the short-term rental game are two very different strategies. They both ultimately net you an appreciating asset, which is the home and the property that you're purchasing. They appreciate, which is wonderful, but they both have different benefits on the tax side of things. So we're going to dive into some of the pros and cons of both long-term and short-term real estate. I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, me too. And I think even in general, before we get started, when it comes to real estate, I just want to say that it can be a wonderful strategy. It's an appreciating asset, all of these things. But if you don't like real estate, then pick something else. Like, I was talking to one of my very high net worth clients last week and asking him, well, you know, how do you feel about real estate? Because currently he doesn't invest in any real estate. He does a lot of other things. And so I just wanted to put it out there and kind of get his thoughts, because it can be a great tax strategy. And in my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's wonderful. Like, why aren't you do some real estate? And he was just like, I don't want to put time into real estate. I don't want to deal with real estate. Mm-hmm. That, you know, and he had more of a negative view on it. And I'm not going to try to change his mind, because if he doesn't have the passion for it, obviously you can invest your money in other ways. You can grow your money. You can do other things with, you know, to create that generational wealth. If you're only going to do real estate for the tax strategy, and especially as we get into the short-term rental loophole, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes, don't buy a short-term rental just for the tax strategy, because you do have to know how to manage it. You have to want to manage it, and you have to actually have an interest in real estate, or you should have an interest in real estate if you're going to be growing your portfolio. So that's my disclaimer for everyone watching.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, if you don't like real estate, this is not for you. So click to the next video.
No, still watch the video, because we might change your mind.
So I started in 2021. Me and my husband bought two rental, long-term rental properties. And I mean, it's stressful. Buying a house is stressful even when it's your own personal residence. So buying two long-term rentals, there was a lot of unknowns. There was like, will we be able to rent it? Will we find like a good renter? You know, what goes into this? All these different things. But the best thing about a long-term rental is if you find a good renter, the only thing you really have to do is purchase the property, purchase the house. If you can find a good renter, you're going to put a good renter in there. They're going to pay you. You're going to hopefully cash flow. So they're going to pay you the mortgage, and then your cash flow is in addition to. And if there's no issues with the house, the house is out of sight, out of mind, and it's just cash flowing you and appreciating on paper, which hopefully at the end of the year nets you a loss and everything's great.
Yeah. Or close to it.
Close to it. Yes. Yeah. It is a great way to dip your toes into real estate because it is so passive. If you're not saving the money, that you're cash flowing, this is where the cons are going to start to come in. So if you have a great renter in there and all of a sudden they decide, well, I can't make rent this month, now you have an issue. Now your cash flowing property just, you just lost your cash flow. So now you have to come up with a mortgage payment. So if you're not putting all that cash flow into an account and saving it, you are going to run into a problem because that mortgage has to get paid even if you as the owner is not getting your rent from your renter. So that becomes a problem. Evictions. It's not as easy to evict somebody from a long-term rental. They do have rights to the property. Unfortunately, you as the owner do have to abide by state laws and do have to go through an entire eviction process. You can't just kick somebody out because they are 5 days late on your rent. You can start the eviction process depending on your state laws. Like South Carolina, you could start the eviction process at day five. It says it right in your contract. So we're a little bit more landlord friendly here in South Carolina, which I love. Mm-hmm. Other states are more tenant friendly. So you have to be very careful as to where you buy your properties. Appliances, HVAC, things like that. When those go, it is your responsibility as a landlord to repair them or replace them. Things like that. So you do have to be cognizant of all those things. Another pro that I did not mention is the tenant that assumes responsibility for the house is responsible for all the things. So we always tell our tenants, I want you to treat the house like it's your own. Sometimes that's a good thing to say. Sometimes it's a not so good thing to say because you don't know how people necessarily treat their things. You hope that they treat their things the way you treat your things. Not always the case. But if they're, when I say treat the house like it's your own, clean it. Clean your floors. Wash your windows. Mow your lawn. You have to stay within HOA guidelines. If you have a long-term rental, the tenant is responsible to take care of all these things. So that kind of brings me to the end of the long-term game, mm-hmm. with the exception of the tax issue, which I kind of mentioned earlier. I don't know if you've ever dealt with this, Marit, but I had a different CPA a couple years ago, and I had questioned whether he had taken into account the fact that I had just purchased two long-term rental properties because I didn't think that it really benefited me on paper at the time. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had a client question it?
No, opposite. So I've actually seen, with my clients, I'm just a communicator, so we don't usually have those problems, but I've had people come from other CPAs where, so with the passive tax rules, because like you just said, the long-term rental is passive, and we have an awesome video about active versus passive income.
We do.
Yeah. So that's the passive income, but there is for long-term rentals a small exception called the mom and pop exception, where if your AGI is $100,000 or less, and you're actively participating, which active participation is just like you make decisions, you participate, you're not just like completely checked out. You do a little bit, but like you said, there's not much work to do in a long term, but you're making decisions, you're getting renters in, you're collecting rent or whatever. Then you can take, if you had a loss, you could take $25,000 of that against your ordinary income, and then it phases out to $150,000. So I've actually had people come to me where they could have taken a loss, and their prior preparer didn't know about the mom and pop exception. And then I'm looking at their AGI and I'm seeing, oh, there was a missed opportunity there. So I've seen it the other way. But if you're over that AGI, then yeah, there's nothing really for you in the passive bucket unless you have other passive income and it offsets it. Right. But it's not going to take care of your W-2 or your business income or anything like that. So I'm sure that you were like, what the heck? I bought rentals. It's supposed to help me.
Yes, that's exactly where I was at.
Yeah.
But
and like he told earlier, you no, huh? He's like, uh-uh, girl.
No. Yeah, he was like, no, this is correct. Now, there's an exception to even that with if you or your spouse can take the real estate
professional
status. Real estate professional status. Thank you. Got you. if you could take the real estate professional status, which we are able to say that Chris does. So he manages all the properties. And there are certain requirements that you have to meet. You have to spend 750 hours across all of your rental properties. It's obviously easier to hit that.
If you group
if
them.
If you have multiple. Yeah.
If you group them. Or it's seven. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And you have to hit 100 hours at each property. So if you have 10 properties, you have to hit 100 hours at each property. So that's something to keep in mind. It's an option, but it doesn't necessarily work unless you and your spouse meet certain requirements. But we're not going to get super deep into that. That is definitely a lot of information, and it's for another episode.
Yeah,
for sure.
We could do a whole episode on reps.
And that's why the disclaimer that Marik gave in the beginning, if real estate is not your passion, run. Because
right.
There's most of the hours of our days go into our real estate, which is not a bad thing because they make us money and we cash flow really well and they're wonderful, but they are a tremendous amount of work. Right. But let's get into short term because this is newer for us, mm-hmm. but there are a lot of very sexy things about short-term rentals. And then there are some not so sexy things about short-term rentals.
And the short terms are kind of new for the IRS too. So that's how come mm-hmm. people have found their little tax loophole. So we'll talk about the tax loophole, but let's talk about, you tell us the pros and cons first. I like that.
Yeah. So short-term rental pros, I mean, they cash flow more. So when you have a long-term rental, you're giving a monthly, you're setting a monthly rental payment. So you're set for the month. That's not going to change. It's not going to fluctuate. It is a standard number and it's going to come in every month. When you have a short-term rental, you have like you're in season, like Myrtle Beach, like summer months, like we are in season now. My house goes for a lot more now than it goes for in like January. January, it's cold. It stinks. We're waiting for May to hit. And
that's funny. You think it's cold day. In your January. Your January it,
yeah,
is
it's like
my
60
spring.
Degrees. But it's price
less
lower.
Busy. Yeah.
Less busy. But if you think about it like this, a short-term rental is priced per day. A long-term rental is priced per month. So if you price your short-term rental out per day and you can fluctuate the prices, now your weekends are going to be more expensive and all that stuff is taken into account, you end up making a lot of money during on season with a short-term rental. So your cash flow is exceptional for a short-term rental. It is significantly higher than it is for a long-term rental. However, and that might be like the only, well, not the only pro. I'll get into the other pro later because it's more technical and it's tax related. The cons, the amount of time that goes into it when you are managing a property, it is around the clock. Like we get messages at like the other day, I got a message at midnight and somebody wanted to book the house for, now it's April, we're at the end of April. They want to book the house for the first week of May. And I was like, well, it's a good problem to wake up to, but I'm not up at midnight. And thank God I was able to get to them at 4 o'clock in the morning and approve their booking. But these things, like you have to be available. And like Airbnb, VRBO, they judge you based on your response time. Like if you don't have a quick response time, that goes against you. That's a tick against you. And it gets noted like, oh, well, this person doesn't have a good response time. So you are literally, you're working when you have a short-term rental. So there's your time management, of course, your yard work and stuff. If you're not an HOA, you're going to take care of that yourself. So our Airbnb is not an HOA. So Chris has to go over there and mow the lawn. So we have a separate lawnmower that's over at the Airbnb. Cleaning the house. If there's like a downtime, like I had somebody check out 2 days ago and I have somebody checking in today, I was able to clean the house myself. So things like that, that's just extra work. Yes, you can hire a cleaning company. Yes, you can hire a management company. But if you do hire different companies, that's going to affect you through the little loophole that we're going to talk about in a little bit. The other thing with short-term rentals is you need to purchase literally everything. Beds, linens, toiletries, soap dispensers, cleaning products, couches, TVs, you name it. Anything that you could possibly want in a house. We have a coffee pot. We have a waffle maker at our Airbnb. Literally, if you can think it up, it is at my Airbnb.
Pack and place. And high chairs.
Seriously.
Baby gate.
We have a dog crate. We have a dog crate. Like, seriously, beach chairs, things like that. Like, literally anything you can possibly think of that, like, we've gone there and been like, okay, what would I need if I was going to go to the beach today? And it's like, okay, we'll make a big list and we'll go to Walmart and we're going to buy everything that we need. It's a lot of money out of pocket, especially your first year.
Yeah.
That being said, the loopholes are so much greater at a short-term rental than a long-term rental. We were able to use the cost segregation study this year, which allows us to depreciate the house more upfront in the beginning, which is a huge tax benefit.
Right.
So that's one of the big things that we got this year.
Yeah. So let's talk about the short-term rental loophole because you led right into it.
Right into it.
I think it's important for people to know. Another reason why we say don't get into real estate unless you want to. The short-term rental loophole is good for 1 year, which is the year you do the cost segregation. If you can do that cost segregation, you can prove your material participation, which we talked about for long-term. It's both the same. We want to take the loss, right? We want to get that depreciation. We want to get a huge loss off of the short-term rental and put it against our ordinary income. So when you buy, when you hear people talking about the short-term rental, you have to take a couple things into account. The first thing is you have to make sure you're not providing substantial services are more for when you have income, but you do want to try to keep your substantial services minimum. You don't want your Airbnb to turn into a hotel because once it turns into a hotel after that first year and you start, because like Kristen said, it's cash flowing. So you're going to use all that depreciation up on the first year and then you're going to have income after that. The loss no longer matters. And in fact, the material participation no longer really matters after you take that loss too. So in year one, you want that 100 hours more than anyone else or meet one of the other 7 tests. You want to not provide substantial services, you know, but be a good host. And then you can cost segregate, you can take the loss against your income. As they say, you're off to the races. But then in year two, since you're cash flowing and you're going to have a profit, you can dial back on that material participation because now you don't have to worry about taking that loss anymore. And maybe now you want to hire a cleaning crew because now you need those expenses in other places because your depreciation is all used up. But back to what Kristen said, it's complex and you want to make sure you have documentation. You want to make sure you're tracking the hours and doing all of the things that you need to do because in my opinion, I feel like the short-term rental loophole it is a bit of a higher audit risk because the IRS computers are going to see a huge loss on your tax return and it will trigger it. And so you always want to just make sure that if you do it, you're working with a professional, they're guiding you on, you know, the tests you need to meet. Oh, that was the other one I was going to say. I knew I was missing one. Average stay has to be under 7 days to take that loss in the first year, which, you know, but, you know, and then in year two, if you want to have longer stays, it's whatever. Again, you have income. The rules kind of don't apply. But in that first year, we need average number of days, 7 or less. And I think the math on that is the number of days rented divided by how many times it was rented. And so that gives you
which is typically easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
like for me, it's easy. Like I have had like a 3-week straight rental and I've had a 2-week straight rental. And I guess you could possibly have like, I absolutely could have like a winter rental, like have somebody rent it for like 3 months. We do have snowbirds that come down to Myrtle Beach, but that's not going to, with the number of people that come and stay at the house over the summer, even like April and May alone, that would definitely flip that number right back down to average of 7 or less.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah. And so just a few things. No, it's a one time. But so the reason why people got so hyped on it was because of bonus depreciation. When it was 100% especially, you could wipe out and have a big loss. You could wipe out any income you had from the short term. You wipe out all of your W-2 and your income. You could do a Roth conversion or a rollover or whatever. But say you didn't convert. So say you had an extra $50,000 loss even after you wiped out all of your ordinary income and everything else on your tax return. The beautiful thing about bonus depreciation is that you can take it against your income and then you can carry it forward. So then now next year, you can use that loss to offset your income and on and on. So cost segregation is great. It takes all of these parts of your house that would normally be depreciated for a short term, it's 39 years, be depreciated on a 39-year schedule, and you can take it all right up front, and then you bonus it out, and that allows you to take the loss even when you don't have anything left to take. So another great thing.
It's very sexy.
Yeah, I like it. That's a pretty simple explanation, and it still feels super complicated. So hang in there with us. And if you want us to do a full episode about any cost segregation or short terms or reps, you know, let us know in the comments, because we could break it down much more. And it's really, really hard to put into a nutshell and make it all fit, you know, when you don't have the time to really get into it.
Yeah. So if there's anything that you guys want us to cover specifically that we kind of touched on a little bit today, definitely put it in the comments, and we could definitely do like a whole video on like reps or a whole video on the cost segregation or, you know, whatever you guys want to see. We can absolutely do that for you and break it down further. But honestly, like long-term rentals and short-term rentals, they both have a very special place in my heart. I like doing both of them. I actually do enjoy it. I enjoy the process of, you know, hunting for a property, and like that's fun for me. And a lot of people only get to hunt for a property when they're buying their own house, and then you don't buy another house for so many years usually, so you don't go get that excitement again. So every time I buy a rental property, I get excited, and it's like we get to look at properties, and it's fun, and it's something me and my husband get to do together because we work together. So it's just all these like little added benefits. It's definitely something that if you're into real estate, do it. Start dabbling, start studying, make sure you have all of your answers to all of your questions, and you'll really enjoy it. But there are a lot of tax benefits, and make sure that you do your homework.
For sure.
I hope you guys like this video, and we will see you guys next time on CPA After Dark.